Vous écoutez Art District. Et tout de suite, c'est Jazz Chronicles, animé par Michael Pelias, en direct de New York.
Welcome, everybody. This is Jazz Chronicles from New York City, live with Michael Pelias, your host, here in New York City, with a very special guest today to whom you just were listening to one of his cuts from his great new CD called Sopranoville, Sam Newsom. I'm very, very happy to have Sam Newsom, in my opinion, the best of the soprano sax players on the New York scene. Maybe I'll get in trouble for saying that, but it's okay. Maybe we'll have a battle of the soprano saxes like we used to have back in the day with Illinois Jacquet right. and company on the saxophone wars. So anyway, I'm a very special guest today. We're going to be discussing with Sam his recent CD and a little plug for that, of course, Sopranoville. And for our French audience, that's the city of the soprano, obviously, Sopranoville. Yeah, yeah. And new works for prepared and non-prepared saxophone. Just a few words about Sam Newsom. He's a local player. He's toured in Europe, is also a professor of music at Long Island University in Brooklyn, and has been here for multiple years in Brooklyn as a professor and as a performer on the New York scene, ranging from Smalls downtown in the Village to Cornelia Street Cafe in the Village as well, many of the avant-garde sites, Mesros, some of the churches. So Sam is really a man about town, a sax player around town, and also an exceptional teacher who puts together two great events with his students, or more than that actually, but a Christmas program and a spring concert here at Long Island University in Brooklyn. So I'm welcoming him here. He is also one of the great experimentalists, a kind of avant-gardist. I'm very much reminded of Eric Dolphy's Out to Lunch as a kind of precursor to what Sam is doing here. And I'll mention one of his earlier CDs called Monk Variations. I'm sure the audience knows Thelonious Monk, and Sam took off from that position, if you will, and did incredible improvisations and experiments with sound. So I'm going to begin with Sam about, what is, maybe the study of the soprano or sopranology, and also what does he see as, his experiments in sound on the CDs itself in the liner notes. He talks about many definitions of the prepared soprano versus that of the non-prepared soprano. So we'll begin there with him, and we'll also hear examples for music. So I welcome you very much, my good friend. Yeah,
and I just want to say it's great to be here. I mean, I've been interviewed by you a few times, so every time I've always left with feeling that it was a great experience. And to talk about the new CD, as stated by the title, it's called Sopranoville. And I guess what's unique about the CD is that it only features the soprano saxophone. And it's different from most, if you want to say, solo saxophone recordings, in that it's just not me playing in an unaccompanied setting. But you might say I'm playing with myself in numerous configurations. You know, I've often likened this approach to be like a Frida Kahlo painting. You know, where
very interesting.
With Frida Kahlo, she was, you know, she appeared as the subject in her paintings, you know, in many manifestations. And it's the same concept, you know. You hear the soprano in many different contexts, melodic, rhythmic, harmonic, textural, but it's all being performed by me, and it's sort of me taking a, it's my vision, but I'm using the soprano in many different facets.
Fantastic. Maybe I can begin conceptually with you. You speak about your playing basically with yourself.
Yeah.
Is this a kind of an experiment in self-referential activity? How would that work? Maybe to explain a little bit to our listeners how this works in terms of the harmonic, the rhythmic, and the other forms that you were speaking about.
Yeah. Well, the solo saxophone format is probably one of the, I would say, the least explored in jazz. You know, I mean, in many ways, it goes against the grain of what jazz is about. You know, jazz is this very social, communal music that's all about people, musicians improvising, creating, innovative in real time. So to actually perform solo, you're going against the grain of the whole idea of groups of people coming together for, if you want to say, a single cause. But I found by me playing in a solo context, it allowed me, I think, to get to something a little more personal. You know, I think one of the drawbacks of actually performing with other people is that it is a give and take. And I guess for me, I didn't want to give so much. You know, I have a very clear idea of the kind of music I wanted to put down, and I didn't want to compromise it in any way. You know, there's a time for compromise, and then there's a time you just need to document what you want to document.
Very interesting. So you're really in a process of consistent self-appropriation rather than a kind of reciprocal relationship that you're talking about. You're taking, you're appropriating constantly in this moment.
In some ways, this is still in the spirit of that type of communal creation that's commonly heard in jazz, in that all of the songs on this record were actually recorded in real time, composed in real time. Meaning, like, for example, this first piece that we heard,
the Doppler effect. Right.
So that basically features three sopranos. And the way that I recorded it was I improvised for a minute or so, and I listened back to it. And then I improvise along with that track, and then I improvise a third time, you know, with the two tracks performing together. So when people hear it, they tend to hear it as a single composition, but I was improvising the entire time. So you have that spirit, but it's still, but it's solely coming from me. So that's the difference between sort of like what you would normally hear in a group context and what you're hearing with this record. So it's solo, but then it's not.
Very interesting. We're going to have to redefine the triad into one, you're working with these three improvisations into a unified piece, which is very, very interesting formally. Can you talk maybe a little bit, speaking of form, but maybe we'll backtrack just for a second. You know, you talk about the solo sax has not been really that featured, although in my experience and my listening, we had the great players like a Dolphy, course everybody knows the Coltrane moment of 7 hours without stopping as soprano saxes historically. But can you speak just a little bit to that? The history of the solo soprano and why it's not featured. And,
well, the thing is, all of the people that you mentioned, you know, they I think we have to define, sort of differentiate the difference between being a soloist and performing solo. Being a soloist, you're actually performing out front, being featured typically with an ensemble. But when you're performing solo, you're performing unaccompanied. So it's just you, you know, and no one else. So that's what I mean in the context that, like typically in jazz, unless it's a chordal instrument like a piano or a guitar, you know, to hear a horn player performing, you know, without any type of accompaniment is a little more rare.
So Dolphy needs Mingus on the bass, and
Coltrane
needs McCoy or Wynn Kelly on the piano to keep the solo going versus
exactly.
You know, what you're saying. Yes.
So, yeah. I mean, as far as relating it to what Eric Dolphy was doing, I mean, it's, I think aesthetically it's very different, but I think what they... If you want to say, if I can humbly compare what I'm doing to Eric Dolphy,
yes.
I mean, what both recordings share is that, you know, it is, they are pushing the envelope. They sort of are sort of doing away with, if you want to say, preconceptions of what a particular sound is. You know, like for what I'm doing here, you know, even though the solo saxophone concept isn't as popular, you know, people do have an idea of what that sounds like. So I guess I feel like I'm trying to even push that concept even more of what it means to be, to produce a solo saxophone recording. Again, going back to the Frida Kahlo comparison, you know, like for most painters, to create a self portrait is probably one of the most difficult challenges.
Yes.
But with Frida Kahlo, she was unique in that she not only took on that challenge, but then she elevated the medium by having several different representations of herself within, if you want to say that, within that. What's the word I'm thinking of? within that self-portrait context.
Right, in the self-referential context, right. Interesting. Unlike her husband, lover, and Diego Rivera, who was very much about reciprocity and, you know, figural work and really outside of the self-referential, which is interesting. I want to kind of, I mean, this is a very difficult subject to broach, but maybe we can start conversation and, of course, pick up with it later. Your notion of sonority, you know, your concept of sonority, and alongside of that, time, temporality. How are you trying to work that out? I mean, I know it's a very difficult thing. I'm opening up a future dissertation for a musicologist here, but you know, to maybe talk about that in a basic way, how you experience time and sonority when you're experimenting this way and improvising this way.
Yeah. Well, I guess whenever I'm creating work in this context, you know, most of it is created, you know, with the understanding that if you want unconventional results or unconventional outcomes, the process through which you create must also be unconventional. So for me, that leads, I mean, for me, for this recording, I was experimenting with what I call prepared saxophone. So with the prepared saxophone concept, you're actually, you're altering the way that air enters through the horn as well as how it exits. So it's in many ways you're taking the whole idea of non-linear thinking to a different degree, because typically in jazz our non-linear associations happen after the air moves through the horn and it's produced a note.
Interesting.
But my idea with this recording was the non-linear process actually started with the air moving through the horn. So then that opened up a whole nother realm for improvisation.
I want to say Sam Newsom is a postmodern artist, according to the philosophical tradition, that he understands that linearity has been completely displaced by what he's actually referring to here in his own creation. Maybe we can cut to another piece of Sam's, about a minute or two of it, Giant Steps. Then maybe he can comment and show us in the piece about, some of the things he's trying to do. So we'll go to Giant Steps. Sam Newsom here, and we just heard part of the piece called Giant Steps, which obviously is reference to the famous John Coltrane piece. He may want to comment on that a little bit, too, for our audience that is not as sophisticated as our guest here today, and also maybe talk a little bit about what, the movement of the sound and time is really happening here. Yeah, please.
Yeah, with this particular track, it actually is Giant Steps, but the reason why it might sound unrecognizable is that the concept of the song was to, at least of the arrangement, was to strip it of its rhythmic framework. So the rhythm that you actually hear is just a natural rhythm that occurs when you play each note of the melody in succession.
Wow. Okay.
So it is Giant Steps, mm-hmm. sort of without the without the bones.
I like that.
And so not only do you get a really, as I say, a very recognizable rhythmic structure, but then there's also a certain tonality that you get, and this is what most of the improvisation is based on that you hear. And then there's also a third component that you hear on that piece, which is there's a phenomenon called a sympathetic resonance. So this is when, and this is accomplished by holding down the damper pedal on the piano. When this happens, and you play into the strings of the piano, it creates a natural reverb. And the sympathetic resonance, that comes from, the phenomenon is whenever you have a passive string, and that passive string comes in vibrating source, and that vibrating source comes into an active contact with an active vibrating source with a semi harmonic likeness, it sets that what is passive vibrating source into motion. So this is one of the reasons you're hearing this very kind of lush reverb that's being created throughout the piece, and what it becomes really lush because you have it happening three times. So it's a lot going on with the piece that without explanation,
right,
you probably wouldn't hear it.
Right. Now, you've made this distinction, too, between the prepared saxophone and the non-prepared. Could you just a short comment on that as well, maybe vis-a-vis this piece we just heard? And
well, with this particular piece, it doesn't really demonstrate that particular idea.
Right, okay.
As much. This was, I mean, if the experimental aspect on this tune is heard primarily from the stripping away
of the rhythmic framework
as well as the use of the sympathetic resonance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But maybe just for the audience, you could talk about the non-prepared saxophone a little bit as well. You know,
the non or the prepared?
The non as well. We don't have an example, but it's also something that's part of your new repertoire and the use of,
Well, I mean, even though the sound, the soprano was not prepared on this particular piece, but I was producing sounds that are considered unconventional. There's something called multiphonics, and multiphonics is basically when you play two or more notes simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And typically, this type of playing isn't associated with melodic instruments. You know, chords, of course, are usually heard on chordal instruments, but with certain wind instruments, you know, there are certain fingerings that you can play that will enable you to play more than one note simultaneously.
Okay.
And I'm not sure exactly why that happens. I mean, one theory is that, basically, whenever you blow a note through, play a note through the instrument, what you're producing is a standing sound wave. But what happens with multiphonics, you have these, I guess what they call cross fingerings. And what these cross fingerings do is they cause the standing wave to split. So what you end up having, what you end up hearing are these two standing waves vibrating through the horn simultaneously, which opens up a whole nother sonic field, because now you're getting into different tones of equal temperament.
Right.
You know, so you have like microtonal pitches along with equal temperament pitches. So it gets if you were to analyze it, it would turn out to be some pretty heady stuff. But I typically don't think of it that way. I mean, when I create, it's always from a very organic
moment,
headspace.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just speaking as a philosopher, of course, Plato and the Republic, the educational system is to be built on music, and I think you just demonstrated somewhat in your explanation how complicated this really is with the splitting of waves, the temporality involved, etc. And I just wanted to ask you, is multiphonic the same as polyphonic? Is that an interchangeable? Is multiphonic a different concept here?
When I think of polyphonic, you know, I'm thinking of basically two different sound sources.
Right.
But with this, you know, one of the reasons that it's different is that you actually have the multiple tonalities coming out of one sound source.
I see. Interesting. Yeah. More organic in that way, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Emergence from one. Okay, great. Well, listen, I'm sorry we have to wrap this up. We'll bring Sam on definitely again. We want to thank him. I'm going to say we're going to end with another piece of his called The Great Debate here. I strongly recommend the new CD called Sopranoville, New Works for Prepared and Non-Prepared Saxophone. If any of our audience is in New York City, you should catch Sam in the local clubs, to put it mildly. And I know he tours in Europe a lot. If he's in Paris, he's a must-see. And in my view, and, you know, I've listened to a lot of these people, I'm not, anywhere near their competences in terms of music, but I consider Sam to be on the cutting edge of a New York avant-garde with Matthew Shipp, William Parker, Sam Newsom is way up there with these guys, and you know,
I'm honored to be mentioned in that group.
Anyway, I thank everybody for listening. We're going to end again, and I thank you, Sam, and please come back.
Pleasure.
And I thought this was great. Maybe we can continue the discussion again soon, pick up where we left off, so that people can become more and more educated about multi-phonic approaches to music, and this wonderful, wonderful experiment, which I think is extremely significant and original in the current jazz scene, and also, of course, within the general history of jazz. So thank you, everybody. We're going to, fade out with the great debate, and which we're going through on multiple fronts here in the United States of Amnesia. But, thank you very much for listening, and thank you to Sam Newsom once again, and Kenyatta Beasley, who's been our sound person, a musician from New Orleans and someone who lives in Brooklyn and practices in Brooklyn. So thank you very much.
À Michael Pelias en direct de New York, vous venez d'avoir un petit aperçu du jazz new-yorkais et c'était bien sympathique. C'était donc Jazz Chronicles avec Michael Pelias et je vous invite maintenant à découvrir la suite de nos programmes sur Art District.